In 1978, China had an extreme poverty ratio of 88%. That's about 800 million people. In 2021, all 800 million of these people had been lifted out of poverty. That means they eliminated what was defined as extreme poverty back in 1978. Now gone. China, during that period from 1978 to 2021, had experienced annual GDP growth of 9.5%. And to commemorate this glorious achievement, Chairman Xi in 2021 came out and said, well, China is now a quote, moderately prosperous society, but now it's time for phase two. By 2049, said Xi, he wanted China to become, quote, a strong, modern, prosperous, socialist superpower. That's a strong, modern, prosperous, socialist superpower. And one of the things I don't think has been fully grasped by people in the West is just how total, holistic, and ambitious Xi's plans announced in 2021 were and remain. One of the initiatives set was called Made in China 2025. This targeted 10 high-tech industries where they wanted China to be number one across those 10 tech sectors by 2035. At the time of writing, 86% of these goals have already currently been met. But they want total manufacturing dominance by 2035. So that's in the next 10 years. On top of that, everybody's heard of the Belt and Road Initiative. They have invested at this point, China, $1.4 trillion plus in 147 countries. That is two-thirds of the entire world's population connected by Belt and Road Initiative. This is a huge increase in global influence for China. And that concept of global influence is going to be very key to understanding what exactly their goals are. Something John Mearsheimer has talked about a fair bit in the past, but I still think, whenever I talk about China on this channel, the comments fill up with, Peter Zahan said, and all sorts of Western cope, essentially, to explain away all of these extraordinary gains that China has had and continues to have and is projected to have into the future. And every once in a while, I'll make a China video like this just to see if people have got the memo yet and just to see where people are on it. And I still think there's quite a lot of ostrich head in the sand sort of thinking when it comes to where we're going in the world and the balance of power in the world. Before I get to the rest of this, pick up a course at the academic agency. Trivium is the best seller. Foundations of Research, many other great courses. Foundations of Shakespeare, if you want to do that one. Foundations of Economics, if you want to get to the nuts and bolts of some of these things. But let's get back now to the matter at hand. China's GDP is currently, as I write this video, $19.6 trillion, okay, in nominal terms. That means it's second behind only the US. And in PPP, it is 41 trillion, which is the number one in the world. So if you have a look at power purchasing parity, which is what PPP stands for, China has already overtaken America. The West doesn't like that number because it tends to rate countries like Russia and Iran and indeed China higher than they would do otherwise. Now, it's also the top manufacturer in the world. It is the top trading power in the world. It is the number one forex holder. Forex is foreign currency holder in the world. Let's have a look, though, at what it is that Xi wants. It's not enough for Xi to be the number one economic power in the world. He has set his sights across the board. He wants to be the number one military power, the number one diplomatic power, the number one power for what he calls global influence. And all of these things are connected. The economy is just the first part of a holistic vision to comprehensively tilt the world in a Chinese direction. Lots of people, and I've been guilty of saying this myself before, is that, well, China don't want an empire. It's not in the Chinese way. Well, if you have a look at the things that Xi has actually said, Chairman Xi, that is, they've certainly got their sights, the Chinese, that is, on global dominance at the very least, whether that's formal empire or not. Almost their plan makes an actual empire unnecessary because they want to be so closely embedded in the way that trade and manufacturing and supply chains and things like this and tech, that's another pillar that she wants to dominate in. They want to be so dominant in all of these areas that it's basically we're living in China's world. You know, it's China's world and we just so happen to be living in it. That's what they're aiming for in a nutshell. It aims to for world-class PLA by 2049. They want a defense budget of $470 billion. That's their aim. They're not quite there yet. They are aiming to get over 1,500 nuclear warheads by 2049. These are explicit, planned for aims by the Chinese government. Currently, they already have the largest navy in the world by ship count. The US still has a bigger navy by tonnage, not by total number of vehicles. So if you add up all of the weight of the US Navy, it means they've got bigger, heavier, bulkier ships, basically. China has got smaller vehicles, but a larger fleet count. And it's aiming for superpower status, to have a superpower status Navy by 2049. They have targeted 90% self-sufficiency in all core technologies by 2049. 90% self-sufficiency means more or less if China was cut off from the entire rest of the world, it can still manufacture 90% of all the things it needed on its own. Quite a hefty target. And it leads now, I mean, that the stereotype of China is that it cannot innovate, that it can't come up with new things. Well, currently, they are the world leader in patents. That's a new thing. They are leading in 5G tech. They are leading in 6G tech. They are leading in electronic vehicles. These are all like the future techs. And China has been, you know, coming. It's become a lot better in these, in the kind of bleeding edge tech areas. They still, right, there's all this talk, well, China, you know, it grew a lot, but it's slowing down. It's got population collapse coming. I mean, the figures tell me that they still have annual industrial growth of 10.3% year on year. 10.3% growth. Remember, here in this country, if there's a 0.1% growth, Rachel Reeves tries to claim it as a victory of some kind. We've had basically stagnant or 0% growth for quite a long time now. 4.3% industrial growth for China, already the world's number one in manufacturing, is nothing to sneeze at. And what Xi calls this plan, this 2049 plan, is national rejuvenation. What does that mean? What does national rejuvenation mean? It wants a kind of composite national strength. And it wants, therefore, on paper at the very least, for the composite strength, that's the economic, the diplomatic, and global influence, manufacturing, and tech, right? These various different pillars. It wants to surpass the USA in every single area by 2049. It wants to be number one on the board, across the board, by 2049. Economists who've looked at the numbers project that China will demonstrably be the number one economy in the world by 2035. Some of the more optimistic projections say that it could, the Chinese economy could be as large as twice that of the US economy by 2049. That's if they really smash it out of the park. On the more conservative end, they're saying something like 1.5 times larger than the US economy. Still nothing to sneeze at. And if you think about it, if everybody in China keeps on getting richer and there's a billion of them and only 300, 400 million Americans, it stands to reason that at some point, as those people become richer together, their economy, as more of them come into what you might call the middle class or the bourgeoisie, whichever way you want to put it, as they have more assets and wealth to their name, eventually all their wages get higher. Eventually they will not only overtake the US, but, you know, be almost double the size of the US because the population is that much bigger, stands to reason. They also want military parity with America, with an explicit aim of having a superior navy. They want superior hypersonics. And there's already some evidence that even Iran has got better tech in hypersonics than the US has, which is interesting. They want superior tech in space. That is the Chinese space program to overtake NASA and whatever Elon Musk is doing. Okay. And they want superior cyber technology by 2049 as well. And last I saw, they're kind of on track to overtake the US in those areas that where they haven't quite done it yet. Chairman Xi also wants to top. So he wants to be number one in the economic sphere. He wants to be number one in the military sphere, number one in the diplomatic sphere, number one in the tech sphere. So there are four pillars to his plan. And what's interesting is that the approach is holistic. He wants all parts of Chinese society to have these four goals in mind and for everybody to be working together to be number one in all those four areas by 2049. So everybody in China has these targets in mind. What's interesting to me is if you contrast that with the situation in the West, right, you can't even get the two political parties to agree on anything, let alone get a kind of, society-wide cooperation for this goal or that goal or that goal. And you saw when Donald Trump wanted to get America working again and all that sort of stuff, how much people were not on the same page, you know, all of the kind of memes making fun of the MAGA workers in the sweatshops and things like that. So there's very much a disparity, I would say, in the spirit of the people in America versus the spirit of people in China. If I was a betting man, looking at things from right now, I know who I'd be betting on. The other part of it, which I think is possibly more insidious, and it comes back to the Belt and Road, is that China are aiming for total supply chain control in what it has identified as core key networks. So when Xi talks about global influence, he's talking about dominating the supply chain to such a degree that without China, you cannot make certain things. We already got a small taste of this during COVID where, you know, a certain type of mask could only be made in China, or there were delays getting this thing or that thing because, you know, it was delayed coming out of China. And what Xi wants is to tilt that balance decisively in China's favor by 2049, such that most of the world will be enmeshed in this, I guess you'd call it control grid, Chinese control grid. Now, I've talked about this before. In some ways, all empires, global empires, have worked like this. The British Empire functioned by enmeshing other powers in its global trade network. And then when people would not play ball in that control grid, or they say, oh, sorry, Gov, I don't want to be part of that, we'll do our own thing, that's when the gunboats rolled in. Uncle Sam, when Pax Americana took over, liked to pretend that it was not an empire, but as soon as the global supply chains, the global trade network came under the American watch, it started doing the same thing. And in fact, we talk about gunboat diplomacy. What is the situation in the Strait of Hormuz, if not gunboat diplomacy? What is the blockade of Cuba all about, if not gunboat diplomacy? So that then begs the question, well, if China then becomes the world guarantor of this global supply chain, will it then start acting in the same way as Britain and America has in the past? And again, if I was a betting man, despite the Chinese character, despite the fact that China has quite a long history of being quite insular and inward-looking, it's like, well, yeah, but if you're the control grid, I would say it's only a question of time until the gunboats come. Maybe I'm thinking about it in too much of a Western way, right? Maybe I'm following John Mearsheimer too much in this, who's always been a bit of a China hawk. But it appears to me that the logic of the thing is, well, look, everybody needs a global supply chain. Everybody needs that. You know, trade is actually useful. That's why it happens. So if somebody starts disrupting that, the military guarantor of it, the superpower, has to be the one to police that. That's always how it's worked. So whether China likes it or not, once it's in this position, it will then have to start engaging in what is called gunboat diplomacy. From our point of view, here in the West, here in Europe, and over in America, you have to think about a world in which it's China that's calling those sorts of shots and not America anymore, or not Europe anymore. That's a world we're probably moving into. I'd be very interested to see the comments on this one, because as I say, whenever I talk about this, people prefer to cope, seethe, come up with all sorts of excuses as to why this is not happening. I have yet to see any evidence whatsoever that this process that I'm talking about is not happening. And, you know, I've been on YouTube for 10 years now. Every once in a while, I make a video like this about China. The comments are the same every single time. And as the years go on, it never stops being true. And they carry on hitting more and more and more of these targets. If you go back in my catalog, I've got videos about China dominating the steel industry. I've got, you know, all sorts of things about Chinese tech revolution. And you can have a look at the comments, you can have a look at the data on them, and then you can have a look at what has happened since I made those videos and the graph since then. Regardless of what Peter Zahn says, it's still carrying, I mean, according to Peter Zahn, China should have been done and dusted 10 years ago. And yet it keeps on moving onwards and upwards. So explain that to me, Sherlock. You can say, well, yeah, but it's facing demographic decline. But the point is, every country is facing democratic decline. And if there's a demographic decline, as well as democratic decline, if there's one thing I learned from Mearsheimer, whose books I've got here, this is Mearsheimer's The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. It doesn't really matter if China's population declines, if everybody else's population is declining. Why does it not matter? Because the important metric when it comes to great power politics and geopolitics is not absolute terms, but relative terms. It doesn't actually matter if China, let's say, loses 200 million people, okay? If that same percentage decrease happens in the West or in America or in any of its other peer competitors. So the fact is, the global population, okay, there's global birth rate crisis going on, not just in China, but everywhere. So if everybody experiences that at the same time, it won't really matter. What matters is China's relative position versus everybody else. And that's actually what happened in history. China, relative to everyone else, was number one for a long time. It didn't decline. It's just the European powers, and Britain in particular, something called the Great Divergence came up. And suddenly, China just stayed where it was, and suddenly Britain was up here. Now, because of the long 19th century and what they call the century of humiliation, the Chinese have not forgotten that. Okay, they're still pretty annoyed about it, and they want to make sure it never happens again. And they take a very long view of these things, as they've talked about, 100-year view, 200, you know, they're thinking about 2050 now. In our politics, the only people who think in those sorts of time horizons are vilified, like Klaus Schwab or Tony Blair or people like this. Maybe they're correctly vilified, but the fact is most of the rest of our politicians are engaged with the flim-flam of the everyday of nonsense, basically, whatever nonsense is happening now. Whereas the Chinese are looking over there, they're thinking, look, we want to be here by 2049. Ask Donald Trump about 2049. He doesn't care. He'll probably say, I'll be dead by then. I hope I'm remembered in a great way. He's thinking of himself. He's not thinking about anything else. It's not just Trump. It's every politician is like that. All right, that'll do. I'll be interested to see how this goes. Comments are always wild when it comes to China, but it is where it is. Pick up a course at the academic agency, and I'll catch you all tomorrow. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.